ACLU Representative J. Bennett Guess gave a statement to the WSWS. It was abhorrent the way they were detained, especially without regard for the children. Children were left at daycare centers. These are extremely hard-working, low-wage workers who are highly exploited. What happened is a travesty of justice. What we are witnessing is the systematic dismantling of due process by every administration, Democratic and Republican alike. He added that this was of extreme concern for all, regardless of immigration status. How you treat your non-citizens is how you will treat your citizens. Many workers have stories of close calls. Some, including a family of five, have moved out of their home for fear that they will be hunted down by ICE. Others reported having family who are too afraid to leave their homes. As these horrific scenes play out, both the Democratic and Republican parties are calling for added border security, a term which means more ICE and CBP agents patrolling the country and terrorizing immigrants. Earlier this year, the Democrats supported the Trump-backed bill to hand hundreds of millions of dollars in additional funding to ICE. Some present at yesterday's Norwalk meeting said they had family and friends who had previously been deported by the Obama administration. Tuesday's Gestapo-style raid is a warning to the entire working class. The U.S. government is asserting the right to launch military raids on workplaces, dragging workers off the job and shipping them away from their families. What is to stop the government from using the same tactic against striking teachers, hauling them off to detention centers when their strikes are made illegal by the corporate-controlled courts? If auto workers protest workplace injuries or line speed, why wouldn't the government send police in to arrest the troublemakers and try to make the problem disappear? The trade unions have done nothing to oppose the establishment of dictatorial conditions in America's workplaces. Instead, they pit workers against each other, based on poisonous nationalism, telling workers in the U.S. that their enemies are not the corporations and the government, but workers in Mexico or China. New, rank-and-file committees must be built to protect even the most basic workplace rights of all workers, immigrant and non-immigrant alike. Also today on the World Socialist website, G7 conflict set to deepen at leaders' summit. U.S. primary elections in 8 states confirm rightward shift by Democratic Party. Socialist Equality Party wins significant vote in California primary elections. Judge in Stanford sexual assault case recalled from office following law and order campaign. Oxford Union Debating Society threatened with legal action over censoring criticism of CIA. Israel's Netanyahu tours Europe to advocate for action against Iran. Notes on police violence. Cop who punched woman on New Jersey beach will not face charges. Australia's disability scheme prepares to restrict access for people with autism. Vote no to sellout of New Zealand nurses, build rank-and-file committees. Workers' Party in Argentina seeks to refound Fourth International in alliance with Stalinism. The demise of Savas Mikhail's New Era. And Free Julian Assange rallies called in Sri Lanka and India. You can find all this and more today on the World Socialist website, WSWS.org. This has been Joseph Sandolan for the World Socialist website.
The World Socialist website is published by the International Committee of the Fourth International, the ICFI. The leadership of the World Socialist Movement, the Fourth International founded by Leon Trotsky in 1938. The World Socialist website relies entirely on the donations of readers and listeners for financial support. To give to the WSWS or to set up a regular monthly contribution, go to wsws.org/donate. We urge our listeners to join the International Committee of the Fourth International and one of its affiliated political parties and take up the struggle for socialism.
FRSC. FRSC. channel 267 on your FM dial. FRSC, channel 267 on your FM dial.
And coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz, it's Bathrobes, Pierres, Broadsides, the June 3rd, 2018 edition. Going to have a couple of flashbacks, or actually one flashback, or maybe parts of a flashback, going back to 2005 and the Tent University that was held and then brutalized by police at the edge of UCSC campus. This is going to be later in the show. Up to that point, we're going to have some interviews with Amber of Berkeley, with Joyful Heart of the River Street Encampment, of Peter Marin of Santa Barbara, and other voices from around the town. So don't go away. The quality of the recording should be better because looks like my equipment is working. Perhaps it's been working all along and I hadn't realized it, which is probably the case. I have a slightly new bits of equipment that sometimes elude me. But hopefully you'll be able to hear more of this more clearly, and then that means hopefully the substance of it will come through more effectively. Wouldn't that be nice? So stay tuned.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
So there's not much on the Indie Bay calendar, which I usually consult. There's tomorrow, I should say today, what should I say? Well, actually, it was yesterday. There was the 25th annual Santa Cruz Dyke Trans March, which I didn't get into the march, but I did run across the street, or actually amble across the street to the town clock from the Food Not Bombs event that happens every Saturday and Sunday, 4 to 6 down there, and chatted with a few people, so I'm going to be playing a few of those cuts. But let's begin in Berkeley. Berkeley are actually here, but on the phone to Berkeley, where we're going to listen again to Amber, whom I interviewed either last show or the show before, about the threatened eviction of RV dwellers from the spot at the end of the, I guess the end of University Avenue. I'm not quite sure exactly where their marina parking lot was that they were, in fact, evicted from. Well, here's what the mainstream media had to say about the eviction, which was last Monday. Here's a quick blurb from KCBS News from about a week ago.
have about a week to move on.
It is an interesting collection of people living here. I counted over 40 vehicles. Some have families. Some have people who work. There are disabled people living with their dogs. And they all say they enjoy it here, that it's a community, and that they're sad to be splitting up.
Jessica Prado has lived here for more than a year, was graduated as a journalist at Cal just a week or so ago.
And it's just going to be a little cycle where we all just keep moving around from city to city, because that's going to be the plan.
David is disabled and lives next door with his pit bulldog.
Yeah, it's my daughter. I love
her. Your daughter. What's her name?
Peppa.
Peppa.
Yeah, she helps me out a lot. She gets me moving.
There have been conflicts between the squatters and those who live aboard their vessels across the street at the marina, issues including trash and sewage disposal. At the Berkeley Marina, Tim Ryan, KCBS.
And notice the news bias. Squatters, people living in their vehicles who are living in vehicles with no indication that they're causing any problems or occupying any space that there would be anyone would object to. Although there is this brief mention of a problem with other folks in boats, which I really didn't hear much about. And perhaps I'll ask Amber, the activist who lives there, next time I talk to her about that. And here's another mainstream media news coverage of it, NBC Bay Area News.
Well, this is becoming a widespread problem.
And yes, you're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm not sure if you're on the actual broadcast. We've got a weak transmitter these days, but we're working on it. However, we do have regular streaming and archiving, and that could be where you're listening to us. Who don't know? Who knows? You know. Next up, it's Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides. That's a show I do twice a week. It's the Thursday evening show coming up. I'm hoping to get updates from activists Slippery Salmon Steve Plaich, Big Drum Brent Adams, Wild and Woolly Wes White. I'm kind of making this up as I go, I got to admit. As well as at least part of an interview by an activist down south, Peter Marin. Apparently haven't cooked up a nickname for yet, but no doubt will as I proceed. As well as lots of other bits and pieces, announcements about upcoming protests, possible protests. We're planning to cook something up to some of us to address the issue of the closing of the Loudoun Nelson bathrooms from Bigot Central over at Parks and Rec. So stay tuned for some discussion of that. This is a canned show. It's being prepared before broadcast. We are still in search of a studio. We're still offering a $500 reward. Though it may bankrupt us, you never can tell. Our finances are dripping, dropping, and shrinking. But if you're interested in that reward, assuming it's still available, which I think it is, give a call to me. And also, if you could call me if you have anything, responses to anything I'm doing on the air today. The number is 423-HUFF, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. And that's where you can find me or my answering machine. And I tend to be pretty faithful about returning my calls. I try to be anyway. Or you can go to the freakradio.org website for Free Radio Santa Cruz. And you can get information there about the station and other archived shows from other broadcasters. And all kinds of other cool stuff. So check it out, particularly if you're angling for that $500 prize. So without further ado, let's jump into the show with the usual musical overture.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance.
all other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
And you could thank Pins and Needles, or actually more recently, Pins and Needles was from the 1930s. KPFA, the radio station that my mommy and daddy used to listen to way back in the 60s, and I listened to, or I was there while they were listening. This is was a theme song, I think, either before the news broadcast, which was, I think, then from 6 to 7, like it still is, or some other show they regularly listen to. Sing me a song with social significance. And I try to throw a few of those onto the show, often in desperation off the internet, but a little musical break every now and then adds a break from the droning of my voice and possibly the many interviews I do. So I'm going to begin the show by trying to reach activist Steve Plaich. Steve has run for numerous offices, city council, I think 3 times. He's successfully made it on the board of directors of numerous liberal groups. So let's see if we can find him. Okay, well, as fate would have it, that ringing you heard in the background was indeed an incoming phone call from none other than whipping into shape Wes White. Hi, Wes.
Hey, how you doing?
And Wes, you've been struggling with all kinds of different actions in the last couple years, ranging from opening shelters to nightly camping at the so-called flagpole community, the lawn in front of the Salinas City Council by night while storing everybody's possessions by day, leading groups of people to the Salinas Shitty Council, as I like to call them, or most city councils I generally run by that, as well as contact point for Poor People's Campaign for both Washington, D.C. and Sacramento, and probably, the Lapis Road loiterers who have been driven away, and not to mention the Monterey County. I'm not going to go on about this. Hello, Wes.
Yeah, that's been a lot of fun, and we blocked the RV ban a couple days ago.
Well, that's, of course, what I was impressed with. As I think I mentioned in my, rather indiscreet email to you, I wasn't terribly overwhelmed by your speeches, but your organizing ability really struck me. Somebody brought all those people to stand in line and eventually not only force a no vote on the RV ban, but no vote whatsoever was done.
Right, no motion, yeah.
So give us some background and tell us how that came about in terms of your own work in putting that together, with an idea towards letting your apprentice, Robert, or others who may be interested, picking up some tips of the trade.
Oh, wow. Well, that's some pretty high praise coming from, quite the veteran there. So I heard about it, I think, on the Friday by news. And, of course, nobody knows anything about an agenda until it comes out, except for that one agency. So I had to scramble.
Clarify what it exactly it is. I mean, I've mentioned RV ban, but can you be more specific about what it is and what the prior situation is for RV people in Salinas, and also how many it impacts? The kind of a little bit of that background.
All right. The ordinance states that anything over 7 feet tall or 20 feet long would not be allowed on public roadways, public open spaces, or alleyways. So basically, nowhere within city limits, no parks, no parking lots. I guess that's private property. But that's the other thrust of it too. They go around all the businesses threatening $1,000 or $10,000 a day violation if you let them stay. So they always come back with it. Why they needed this ordinance specifically, they are not very consistent on the reason. They say it's not for RVs, it's not for homeless, yet when you look at the evidence of their presentation, they put up at least a dozen or so homeless RVs, and then like one school bus and one semi-truck, from my recollection. And, you know, and they tried to tell you, oh, it's not about homeless. It's not about homeless. We have other things on the books that take care of that than what you need to support.
How many vehicles, how many homeless vehicles would you suggest this would impact were it introduced and passed?
Well, let's see. We had, I think, 80-plus come from Lapis Road. Chinatown was already impacted and got scurried out. There's a lot on the bridge. You know, there's plenty of places where people are parked throughout the city already. So I would imagine there's probably a couple hundred vehicles that would be immediate. And then there's other vehicles, not just RVs, that people still sleep in their car too. So.
And where do you think this came from in the sense of, were there pressure groups from, I don't know, disgruntled neighbors, eager politicians wanting to raise anti-homeless bigotry?
Well, the official page that's included in the report is from August of 2017, along with council members Steve McShane, Kimberly Craig, and Tony Barrera. There were buddies on it saying that we have oversized vehicles. I know Kimberly has complained in the past about trucks parking on the sidewalk and ruining the sidewalk because they're so heavy. And, you know, persistently parking in the same spot, so then it eroded the sidewalk, and they should have to pay for it. I do remember that, her saying that a long time ago. But then when you look at the evidence, it goes back to that again. The RVs overwhelmingly dominated their whole entire report, the sewage, the health and safety. So I think it all got rolled into the same thing. And, of course, the hatred of poor people ended up screaming the most.
Well, the visible poor people are, you know, uncomfortable. They might attack our children and things of that sort. We know that. They're well-known beasts that are only kept at bay through our police department. But I guess, of course, I'm speaking sarcastically, but, again, I guess what I was wondering, is there any particular right-wing interest groups that are pushing this? Sounds like you don't have a line
on that. Not like a Take Back Santa Cruz, nothing like that. It would be the Chamber of Commerce and the Downtown Business Association, which now call themselves CIA.
And are you interested? I mean, you actually have evidence of that, or that's the usual suspects in your view?
Okay, last year at the Tansy, they made it very well known that they did not want a shelter anywhere near the downtown. It had to go. All the drugs. I saw heroin. Even, you know, what do you mean? Have you been doing heroin? I don't think so, but, you know, whatever he looked at, he's automatically assumed it was drugs. And they helped make sure that we ended up with a 30-day drop-dead agreement. The Chamber of Commerce, the Downtown City Center, and the mayor.
Now, hold on, Wes, slow down for a second. You did mention this yesterday, 2 days ago, when you spoke at the mic of the Salinas City Council. And frankly, although I'd heard you discuss this before, I was a little left behind. Clarify what a 30-day drop-dead agreement is, because you know what it is. But I don't think
with the Tansy thing, the 30-day drop-dead agreement is you get 30-day extension and nothing else. Don't ever come back to me for another negotiation.
And the negotiation was about what?
The negotiation started out at this Tansy meeting. Supervisor Alejo made a motion somewhat around the bend of the way things are supposed to, you know, protocol procedurally be done. But he put it on the agenda. They were forced into a conversation about it, trying to extend the warming shelter from April 30 to November 1 of whatever, 2016 maybe. That was on the table. That was the original piece of paper agenda item. Then it became absolutely not. That vote was resoundingly shot down. And then it was like, okay, how about up to June 30 and a month after that? Or actually, that was the first one. That was the second one, the June 30 and then month. That one was shot down in favor for the substitute motion of the 30-day drop-dead agreement given by King City Mayor Mike LaBarre, who claims to have been homeless 17 years ago, but now should care less about him. And, this is a Tansy building. This is meant for Tansy purposes. We don't have any business running a shelter.
What is a Tansy building? I'm sorry.
Tansy is the Transportation Agency of Monterey County.
Gotcha.
Another public entity in charge of billions of dollars to misspend it any which way they please.
As your tutor in these matters, I would encourage you to treat your audience as though they've never heard of these things before. And, you know, even though it feels maybe time-consuming to you and kind of pointless and repetitive, go through them when you talk, because you are often so filled with passion in these issues that you tend to, you know, assume we know what you're talking about, when I think many of us, even those of us who discuss the issues, don't. But, you know, the real issue that I wanted to get to you is your experience organizing people to come. You didn't have much time, you said. It was about 3 days before, on the Friday, you learned about this on the agenda, which is what we too find here in Santa Cruz. What did you do then? What kind of a reception did you meet? What problems did you encounter? Talk a little bit about that.
I think I tried approaching the county, and it took me a couple of days to actually even think of the flyer to print out, so we didn't even print that up until, I think, Sunday. And, well, gosh, I mean, you know, how do you really, you have to go hit people up, you know, and we went door-to-door, RV to RV, and just told them what's up, and here's a piece of paper, please come. Did that probably for, well, I had 160 flyers. I got maybe, 20 after it was over.
How many spots did you visit, Wes? How many, general localities did you go to?
Probably about six or seven.
So pretty much RVs are clustered in those spots.
That I knew of.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I went to there's shopping centers. I went over there. I went over to parks, and then a couple of the industrial roads, and everybody complains about all those all the time. And, oh my god! What are we gonna do? Let's just get rid of them.
Now, have you approached RVers before on other homeless issues, or on maybe this issue in a prior incarnation?
A lot of those people were first time I met them, and a few of them I had met before, actually two or three iterations now of these cycles of pushes. But, is it only a crisis that ever brings us together? It seems to be that way. And unless it's a crisis that directly affects those people, it seems to be that way.
Did these people who showed up at the and spoke quite eloquently, and I won't be able to, I don't have time to play this, the series of recordings, which you can find on YouTube, which I guess you edited a video of some of the speeches that were made. But there's also the Salinas City Council, which has, I presume, a more complete, hopefully, a more complete rendering of this.
Oh, of course, yeah. No, the City Council meeting is available online, the Salinas channel, no space.
Yeah,
and you can see the whole thing here.
I mean, you invited me to come, and I said, oh, no, that's too far away, I'm too busy, I'm too tired, yada, 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 go do it yourself.
You're fine.
You know, but you did just fine.
We begged, borrowed, and pleaded everybody. I even went Monday morning to the county. They usually don't meet on a Monday, but they have budget hearings, and I was able to interject about two times like I said, whip them into shape. I cracked the whip on all them bastards, and nobody gave me a response anyway, because, you know, who cares? I mean, you know, I think it was already predecided, predetermined by the county and city to do exactly what they did 6 months ago, was when they decided it, and they've been doing this dance ever since. And, unless somebody has a majority of the board, or at least thinks they're going to get a majority of the board on some kind of issue, they don't even try.
So are you saying that you approached the county around the issue of appealing to the city, because it was the city that had this RV law up for consideration?
But also because of the Lapis Road that the county also instituted, that would be good to try to overturn, the county pushed an awful lot of the problem from, and that would be a result of Marina and the Peninsula cities before that.
So the Lapis Road issue
used that as a reasoning to say, well, other cities have similar ordinances as this, such as here, there, Monterey, Marina, Monterey County. They threw all that shit in there.
So, have RV people ever come to any of your other protests that were, in solidarity with the people who are not in RVs but who are nonetheless outside?
there were about three or four consistent house folks that have been very supportive.
By housed, you mean housed in RVs?
Houses in house in a house, and this isn't their shtick, but here they are supporting it because I put a Facebook thing on it.
Now you're also working with the Poor People's Campaign, which is planning and doing CD protests in different cities around a variety of issues with the brand of the Martin Luther King anti-racism, anti-war, anti-poverty sticker on the protests, and hopefully, in substance also on the specifics of the protests. Have you found that this Poor People's Campaign has had any uniting effect on local Salinas activists who are busy in their own boroughs but don't seem to get out to get much action done supporting each other?
Poor People's Campaign has not made a dent in this place at all. I mean, I haven't tried advertising it even. I mean, this Facebook event that I just emailed you a little bit ago has Poor People's Campaign, half of the flyer as a picture. So this is the first I've ever been pushing it. Monterey Peninsula Peace and Justice Center, they just added events about the Poor People's Campaign this week. So I'm actually inspired because of that, because I might be able to pull some of them people onto my bus.
Explain what your bus is and where it's going and when it's leaving and so forth.
So I guess I got a little bus reserved. I can fit 40 people. We're going to pick people up in Salinas, California, right next to Chinatown on Market Way and California Street. About 8:30 in the morning, the bus is going to leave sharp. So we're trying to get people there by 8.
What day?
Everything there.
Uh-huh. What day?
That will be June 11th, the Monday, this coming Monday.
Mm-hmm.
We'll leave it probably 8:30. We'll come back maybe, depending on when the action is over. I think we'll probably be leaving by 6 at the latest.
And this is an action in Sacramento. And what is the nature of the action?
Well, this week is... Now, see, you want me to do homework. This week is about... everybody's got the right to live, education, living wage jobs, income, and housing.
Does the sacred H homeless word ever show up in any of their literature or in any of these protests?
I suppose it will be remain to be seen. I don't know if it'll ever meet your standards, Robert.
I'm not talking about my standards. I'm talking about common English. Does the word homeless show up, A, in the protests, and B, has it ever been a focus of any of these CD protests, which have been happening nationwide, right?
Yes, they have been in over 40 states. They've been happening. I don't know how many. I doubt there's terribly many. I know I've met a couple myself who are unhoused in D.C., but I don't know how big of a percentage, or how much. Yes, they include it in their wording, but as far as I know, what you're really getting at is what kind of fucking impact do they do?
Well, not even that. I'm just what the focus is. I mean, one talks about equal, good jobs, good wages, good housing. Sure, why not? Good stuff, very important, and probably important to a much larger number of people who are teetering on the edge of homelessness. But you and I, at least. Most, maybe just me, my big focus has been on civil rights for people outside. So naturally, I focus on that issue. That isn't to derogate the other issues. But if, insofar as this is a broadcast that has a lot of information about homeless stuff. I mean, unions carry lots of information about union organizing, or they should. Housing poverty pimps carry a lot of information about the need to support their housing organizations and how wonderful they are. And in some cases, they're not bad, not as bad as they could be, I suppose. So I don't need to do that. That's not my job. That's not what I think is important. That's not what's being unsaid. So that's the reason I raise these issues with you. So I guess what I'm wondering is, since some people who are listening to this are principally concerned with civil rights for the homeless and services for homeless people, have any of these protests that you know of focused on that issue? And are they likely to? I'm not saying they can't. People can always change what they're doing. But up to now, what you've seen, and if so, if you know, where were they, what did they do? Not Not what wonderful concert.
Then for that, that would have been week two when I went to Sacramento for the second week. This is now the Monday the 11th will be the fifth week. And on the second week, I went to Sacramento, and that was more about, systemic racism and poverty. So yeah, that was the week where they focused more on the unhoused, houselessness. I don't know which one.
What did they do that was a focus on that? I mean, when you brought a gang of people that talked particularly about, you know, the impact of a repressive law on the lives of people in RVs. What did this protest, the second week of their protest, do in Sacramento in terms of what its focus was specifically? You understand what I'm saying?
Okay, no, it was pretty broad then.
I'm not critical. I'm just saying, you know, was there any said, oh, that Sacramento homeless are being kicked around here or there, or homeless across the state are being bounced around, or people are being arrested for protests if they're homeless? Or, in other words, did the evil H word show up in their protest?
I think so, yes.
Good. I mean, I guess it didn't sound like that you got a very specific understanding of anything particular they were protesting in that particular event.
Correct.
Other than, you know, we can all be against poverty, war, and injustice, woo-woo. But what does that mean in terms of concrete demands?
Okay, well, exactly. Well, and so now we're going in circles because you just said you were only worried about the words, are they included, and now you're like, but what about the impact?
I'm not talking about the impact. I'm talking about the goal. Whatever impact you're going to have, you never can tell, and it's important to, of course, assess the impact. But if you're not even reaching for that, you know, you might have a good impact sort of just...
Okay.
So in other words, I was wondering what the goal was in terms of specifics, and... But in any case, you know, I know you feel the importance of solidarity with different groups in terms of ultimately, and I, you know, how can one deny your success if we look at the RV situation? Although there, you did not go out and say, gee, let's fight general lack of justice toward people in RVs. You said, get your asses down to City Hall or they'll pass this nasty law. And they did.
That's it. Yeah.
But did anybody say that about any of these protests that are happening in Sacramento? Not that the legislature there would pay any attention to them, mind you. But,
well,
you know,
you got to look at the way our society works, the way that we're brought up to operate. I mean, and behave. Are we brought up and taught that we should care about anybody else but ourselves?
Yeah, but I'm not. Yeah, but come on, Wes. You went out and you did.
Well, what you're talking about is actually a guilt on whole society trip.
No, I'm talking about an effective organizing specific strategy versus something else that isn't working that way or has got some other objectives. I'm trying to understand that because, you know, you're putting in a pitch and you're going yourself to Sacramento on Monday and maybe to Washington. You mentioned that to me because you know, apparently they want you to go speak there. You spoke there a couple of weeks ago or a month ago, whenever you did. I'm just wondering, you know, what specifically is being planned for those particular dates and times. And, you know, you may have more information.
Oh, gosh.
You may have more information for me on Sunday. I'll do another show then, and that's the day before. You probably have more info on that.
I hope so.
Yeah. So, do you think did you form any contacts with RV people that you think might be helpful in future struggles? I mean, in terms of, you know, phone contacts, emails.
Well, you may or may not know this, but a lot of people don't. They're very private. So what I did was I gave everybody my card.
Uh-huh.
And I have yet to, know if anybody's going to call me back. I mean, just like with anything else, nobody gives a shit about anybody else but themselves until they fucking need something from you.
Are you a cynical dog, you?
Well, it is frustrating and upsetting because here I am going and helping everybody I can, and everybody else just wants to sit down and do their own thing, but it definitely helped me.
Well,
you know, it's goofy. It's, and like I said, I mean, that is a charge on society. Because we've obviously pushed people toward this because who's your favorite friend? Paper.
So, what exciting adventures are coming up next in Salinas that we should be likely to see that you are, should we say, either positive or negative that are on the agenda as far as you can see, not necessarily the city council agenda or the stupid Vipers agenda, as I sometimes call the supervisors, but, you know, the different the power centers in Salinas or the alternate power centers that you were able to rouse, the RV people, the people who are being impacted by this stuff, came and exerted their power and they got somewhere.
Right, for a minute, you know, that's the hard part. So, yeah, no, a follow-up thing that I've been thinking about, and I think I've mentioned this to you before, and I'm too lazy to actually follow through on it, just like a lot of other things, but, and I've got a little bit of a rough sketch. You know, what kind of minimal standards, requirements, whatever, do we expect out of people who are living outside, and what kind of expectations do we have? You know, now that we've proven the point that we're just sentient beings, not causing no violence or nothing, you know, leave us alone. You know, how do we fend off that? So I was thinking, you know, look, my space is less than 400 square feet. Everything's nice and tidy. I do all my drugs in my tent, so you don't see anything. So leave me alone. I'm not being violent. Nothing. I'm also videoing this thing. I'm not going to tell you my name. I'm not going to tell you nothing. In fact, I want to know why you're even here. You know, am I free to stay? Because there's absolutely nowhere else to go. This is city's public space, and where I'm going to be going is public space. So, you know, you really have no right to be bothering me.
So this is
calling this a high priority. There's something wrong with you. You're crazy.
This is a civil rights training you're talking about, then.
What I'm thinking of is putting all this stuff on a card. What does it take to be a union member? If you want to be a union member and you want a union to represent you, what requirements am I going to expect to be able to want to represent you?
Member of the Monterey County Homeless Union.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, because certainly we all have rules, we all have standards, social and otherwise. I mean, you know, you don't. You can look at a person wrong and get in the clock for it. You know, and you know better than that. So, you know, just the same way as you wouldn't hit a woman because she's going to get beat. You know, there's always repercussions for consequences of action. You know, so all we're doing is looking for what's the minimal rules. Well, you ain't got shit all over the place, so let's say 400 square feet. That's 20 by 20. I'm hoping that's big enough. I don't know, maybe, I thought, people were talking 10 or 15, that's why I just said 20. You know,
So I think what I'm going to do here is, since I'm cramming everything into what for me it's a relatively brief 2-hour period, is have you, you know, do you have any updates you want to pass on prior to your Monday departure? I'll call you on Sunday or you can call me. Also, I want to let you know and listeners know that 11 o'clock tomorrow, I think you already know this, Friday the 8th, there's going to be a organizational meeting around the issue of designing an action to reopen the Loudoun-Nelson bathrooms, which were closed, I'm not sure exactly when, but in the last couple of weeks, and certainly maybe even the last couple of months, they've been closed except to the privileged few who are using the center on okayed projects. And as I say, a person who's in the park, wants to take a piss or a dump, better go do it out behind the bushes, unless they're under the age of 6 or something, and they've got to be in the children's playground and a child. If they can get past the fence, because now they've fenced off the entire area, although it's open during the day. In other words, this series of really overtly anti-homeless measures, which the excuse, of course, is vandalism against the bathrooms, which is a perennial excuse. It's certainly a consideration of keeping up public restrooms open, but it's not the consideration. The question is, how do you weigh the cost of police cleaning up a lot of shit outside bathrooms to fixing bathrooms when you have problems, or monitoring them more closely if you feel like you need to do that? So I'm not terribly happy with that idea either. In any case, we're planning at 11 o'clock tomorrow at the Sub Rosa. I am not leading this group, for those who find me perhaps too dictatorial. Who knows? Me? No, never. Nick Whitehead is leading a group that it's yet to have an official name, but I think some people call it Conscience in Action. Another group is called it the Surf City Players, where surf is S-E-R-F. And we're talking about a series of actions, one of which is going to be, we're not sure if it's going to be an action targeting the Parks and Rec Department, that is to say, lobbying them in a peaceful way, but also doing so in a way that maybe have to get their attention if they're going to continue to lock bathrooms away from people who need them, particularly people who are outside who really need them. So that's going to be happening at the Sub Rosa Cafe, 11 a.m. tomorrow for folks who are interested. And we will then be specifically announcing an event once we've cooked one up, which may or may not involve civil disobedience, may or may not involve risking arrest. We'll see what people want to do, and we're also going to be looking forward to another event, as I understand it, from the last meeting, which we had yesterday. We're kind of pushing up the timetable because it's really hard for people to walk around holding their water. If you take a piss in the bushes, that subjects you to not only a possible citation, but, you know, you could be declared a sex offender, I suppose, if they really want to try to push it, which hangs with you the rest of your life. I mean, it's really grotesquely evil, the kinds of stuff that's being done ethnically by city after city, and most importantly, in our city. That's what's important, at least to me, in this city here in Santa Cruz. So anyway, I just thought I'd mention that, and Wes, for those who want to, you're invited, of course. I'm inviting, you know, everybody's invited. It's an open process. And is there more you want to say before we kind of sign off until maybe Sunday, when you might have more to pass on?
No, I applaud what you guys are up against and working on. You know, it's definitely a daunting challenge to fight, you know, this very strong coalition of downtown businesses in the city. They're crushing you right now, and I'm glad that you're going to put up some staunch resistance. I like it.
Well, we'll see how staunch it is and how much of what goes on. And thank you for your good work in organizing. And sounds like a lot of back patting.
Yeah.
But, you know, yeah.
You need it, man. There's so much hurt in the world, man. You need some kind of pick-me-up sometime, dude. And I mean, seriously, shit, man, I've lost tens of thousands of dollars in this thing already. And what has it gotten more than a push? I mean, you know, I was surprised last night or whatever, you know, the RV ban. Just keep on chipping away at it, man. The truth is what's going to actually set all this stuff right. It's just the right kind of people need to do it. There's plenty of money. You know, it's just the interest. Where there's a will, there's a way. And as long as you keep on putting truth to power, man, there ain't no stopping you.
Hey, we'll talk again, Wes.
All right, boss. Have fun.
Bye-bye.
Government is going to grant themselves power. what a privileged life. Living in Hawaii is a paradise and making a ton of money. What would it take to make me leave everything behind?
The greatest fear that I have regarding the outcome for America of these disclosures is that nothing will change. People will see in the media all of these disclosures. They'll know the lengths that the government is going to grant themselves powers unilaterally to create greater control over American society and global society. But they won't be willing to take the risks necessarily to stand up and fight to change things, to force their representatives to actually take a stand in their interests. And the months ahead...
And that was Every Call You Make, a song about whistleblower Edward Snowden by the ECYM Project, a group of volunteers who, they write, have pooled our talents and resources to bring awareness to the matter of NSA, National Security Agency intrusions, and wiretapping. And their soundtrack is apparently still on YouTube, but you can no longer purchase. Their account's been terminated off iTunes, Apple. And this was published like 5 years ago. But Snowden is still in exile in Russia, and what he exposed is still exposed, and what's being newly exposed by WikiLeaks and others hopefully will continue to reveal what's going on and ultimately encourage people to action that will force a change. So there was a special meeting of the City Council yesterday, June 6th. It started at 10 a.m. and I don't know how long it went on for. It was about the proposed budget to prepare and direct the staff to come back on June 12th, which I guess is next Tuesday, for a more complete budget hearing, which is, of course, how the city supposedly is supposed to be spending the money, the lion's share of which goes to Parks and Rec and the police, as has generally been the case for the last 25 years. And I don't have the actual agenda of the next Tuesday City Council meeting, which happens every, well, the second and fourth Tuesday of every month, except for, I guess, probably August, or they may go on vacation in July. Sometimes they go on vacation at strange times, or different times anyway. But I should have it by Sunday, and I'll mention it then, I suspect, although who knows, maybe I'll be encouraged by the kind of work Wes White did in blocking an abusive RV ban. I mean, here we had to get the Coastal Commission to block it, and that blockage is a little unsure and insecure even now. I'm going to read now a letter from the American Civil Liberties Union, or at least selections from it, dated April 13th, and it shows you how far behind are. We're already 2 months beyond that, nearly. It's a letter to the City Council, to the Director of Parks and Rec, who is now Carol Skurich, with Mauro Garcia gone, Isaiah Ray, Supervisor of Loudoun Nelson Community Center, and Andy Mills, Police Chief. Ladies and gentlemen, the Santa Cruz chapter of the ACLU has been holding its monthly board meetings at the Loudoun Nelson for many years. We're concerned to see several recent changes that appear directly directed to reducing the ability of homeless people to use this public facility. If our concerns are not satisfied, we will reluctantly, because we love the Loudoun Nelson as a community center and resource, need to find another space for our monthly meetings. However, they still met there last month. First, we appreciate that until recently, Loudoun Nelson has allowed all members of the public, including the people living on the streets, to use the bathrooms, particularly because there are very few public bathrooms in the city of Santa Cruz. In fact, there are no public bathrooms open at night. There's several overnight porta-potties, often described as filthy and locked during the day. The most famous one is the Posner Poo-Poo Machine, which is at the corner of Front Street and Laurel. I haven't been in there lately, and I think when I was in there several years ago, it didn't look so bad. They used to have some along the pathway at the park, but the San Lorenzo campground was closed down by Parks and Rec and Andy Mills, and people were essentially forced to disperse into the bushes and wherever else they could hide or attempt to find shelter for the night. And there was, of course, the small River Street barbed wire boneyard campground open up, which was a step forward for the few people who could get in, but is coming to an end at the end of June with either no internal organizing. We found that out from Joyful Heart, at least he was, that was his report. He's an employee of the River Street campground. Nor any apparent alternate spot for people to go to, even if they are willing to engage in, you know, subject themselves to subversive, invasive searches, be separated from pets, and I don't know if couples are going to be allowed to sleep together or were allowed to sleep together. It's a very, from many regard, for example, the model of the, even the Association of Faith Communities winter shelter, where you got searched coming and going. And I guess this year you were allowed to walk up there, unlike the Boneyard campground. In any case, there's no plan to have any particular location. They had talked about the armory, but the armory, and they'd chosen that out of, I guess, the least shrieking from neighbors nearby, based upon the neighbors' perennial concerns, mythological concerns about disease, public safety, insecurity, the children. It's always a series of sort of fright wigs that they put on to, maybe they look in a mirror and they scream at themselves to see that. But it's a form of prejudice against poor people outside and attributing to them all the worst things they can imagine. We're taking isolated instances and presuming that they are either the norm or they're so bad they overrule any needs that people have outside, and so people must be eliminated from their neighborhood. That's the theory around this Loudon-Nelson situation. Here's more from the ACLU letter. Recently, however, signs have appeared stating that the Loudon-Nelson bathroom is no longer for public use. We understand that vandalism occurred in one or more of the bathrooms, but it seems to be an extreme and unwarranted reaction to punish the entire range of homeless people and make their life more difficult because one of a few unknown people vandalized the bathroom. And I might add, I've never seen the specifics around how many times this has happened, how extensive the damage was, who made the decision to close them, how much of it was a public decision, with any kind of input from service providers or investigation of alternate resources. None of that has been available, and there's been no public process whatsoever around this. It seems to us, the ACLU letter continues, written by, or at least signed by, Peter Geldblum, good for him, to make more sense to investigate, identify, and appropriately punish the vandals. Moreover, it appears that the new policy is being applied discriminatorily and therefore illegally. We have heard reports of well-dressed people who are not Loudon-Nelson clients using the bathrooms without difficulty. In fact, one of our board members entered Loudon-Nelson on a day she was not a client, used the bathroom, and was not approached. We believe this new policy is intended to discriminate and is being enforced in a discriminatory manner. Second, many people living on the streets spend time in the public park at Loudon-Nelson. Although the park is open to the public, we have heard from several people who are homeless that they are being told by city employees or contractors to leave the park during the daylight hours. Of course, parks are all closed at night to stop the menace of homeless people sleeping in them. In addition, First Alarm employees have been forcing people who are taking shelter from the rain under the awnings to leave that shelter. This action is not only cruel, but obviously discriminatory. I don't know, we don't discriminate. If you look homeless, we'll drive you away. It's a very clear criterion. That's my sarcastic addition. Third, signs have recently appeared announcing rules that are plainly designed to keep homeless people from using the park, including closing the park from sunset to sunrise, enforced by a new fence surrounding the park, prohibiting personal property on sidewalks, walls, and pathways, and prohibiting sitting or lying on sidewalks, walls, pathways, doorways, and alcoves. We are certain that the police, rangers, and First Alarm are not going to enforce these rules against park users such as basketball players and families with children. but only against people they find undesirable, people they wish would simply disappear because they are poor and dirty and carry their possessions with them. The ACLU seeks to protect the civil liberties of all people, hardy har har, including those living on the streets. As you know, Loudon Nelson was named to honor the man who donated the land to the city. Loudon Nelson, I think it's London Nelson, a freed black slave, and he actually says London Nelson, who gave the land to the Santa Cruz City School District for the use and benefit of promoting the interest of education. We are certain that he would not be in favor of these discriminatory practices. We would like to meet with those who have decided to make these changes and discuss how far our concerns can be satisfied. And then there's a number left, signed Peter Gelblum, Chair, Santa Cruz Chapter of the ACLU of Northern California. I'm about to call Steve Plaich, who's the vice chair of that board, and see if they've gotten back to the ACLU, the park masters who've closed the bathrooms and set up these ordinances and hired these police and police agencies to shoo away the homeless.
Hey,
Steve, this is Robert calling in for Free Radio. I'm doing an update on the ACLU's concerns about the Loudon Nelson Park closure to the homeless, in essence, and the Loudon Nelson facility's closure or extreme restrictions being put upon folks. I wanted to get your update on whether there's been a change or a response from Carol Surich or any other city agencies regarding your April 13th letter from the board to the city. It would be nice if you actually answered one of these calls. The number here is 423-4833. Thanks. So now in a second attempt, hopefully more successful, to update, we're going to contact Brent Adams and see if he's got any word on what's going on with the storage program that he assured us he would be opening on Monday, I guess it was June 4th. He was very tight-lipped about it when we last tried to talk to him on the air, although in the past he's been very free-spoken and informative, and I hope that we can actually find that's the case again. We're ringing Brent now. Probably more helpful than many other recordings.
Warming Center Program, Santa Cruz and Watsonville. Warming Center Program is closed for the season, but we are offering the day and night storage program, opening between 7 and 9 in the morning and 5 to 7 p.m. at night over by the Warrior Stadium behind Wheelworks, a little parking lot back there by the levee. Look for the white shuttle van. We'll be able to store your blankets, bedding, and other personal belongings. You'll sign a basic contract. It's all going to be good, and we're happy to help you. If you need shelter, do call the Homeless Services Center at 458-6020. Squeaky wheel gets the grease on that one. If you need blankets or warm clothing, leave a message. Keep calling back. Take good care of yourself so we can take care of those around us. And we'll see you soon at the Warming Center program.
So that's the first I've actually heard of the storage program being open. The rest of the message sounds pretty canned, unfortunately. And I'm often pleased to get Brent on the air because he's anything but canned, and when he speaks candidly, even when he tries to shut himself off because he wants to preserve a respectable image for potential funding sources, I'm hopeful of getting more information, maybe even today, but I probably won't have it by the time this is being broadcast. I'm sure I won't, but maybe on Sunday I'll have more information about whether this is an accurate recorded message. I kind of assume it is, because I think Brent is cautious about these things in terms of not misstating specific services he does or does not have available. So we'll hope that that's in fact the case. But he did fail to send me an email noting when this was opening, where it was opening, during the hours it was opening, and so forth. So check it out from 5 to 7. I guess it's in back of the stadium. And maybe we'll find that there is at least a few individuals who put together a shelter program long needed in Santa Cruz, at least for a percentage of the homeless population. So I'm going to go now to the usual interviews I do at the Red Church, which has reopened. On Monday, the church was opened again, at least the parish hall part of the Calvary Episcopal Church, the Red Church, at Lincoln and Cedar Streets. Previously, it had been shut down for a month for, termite removal, something to that effect, or asbestos removal. I'm not entirely sure. But there was the gang was in the kitchen serving food again. There was a much smaller number of people there, perhaps because it was the beginning of the month, folks get their checks, or perhaps because people had become accustomed to believing it was not actually operational anymore. Although I believe one of the workers, Sharon, announced it at the last Food Not Bombs meal on Sunday, or perhaps it was Saturday, I'm not sure. Anyway, let's hear some of that, and actual voices of human beings who are not me.
So it's June 4th at the Red Church, recently renovated, fenced off, entering Parish Hall, which is reopened after a month. With fewer people than in the past. Mama Val, usual crew serving bagels.
So they got everybody up. He said, you can't sleep here and you can't sleep at the beach.
So what street are you talking about?
Pacific Avenue and everything, all the surrounding streets of it.
But no one was ticketed, you say?
No one that I've seen.
How many people would you say were impacted?
I would say at least 50.
Were you one of those?
Yes.
About what time did this happen?
Mine, about 5:45 a.m.
How many cops or rangers? Who was involved?
Cops.
How many would you count?
Three cars everywhere they stopped.
And what did they tell you? To give you a place to go, or did they just say get moving?
Get moving. Yep.
And when was the last time this happened to you?
It's never happened. I was in the shelter, so.
So you've been out of the shelter for about 2 or 3 months now?
A year.
And you've been outside?
Yeah.
But you haven't been hassled?
No, first time.
Because you've been prudent, or because you think the policy has changed?
I think they had a bad weekend. It's a Pride week. And the store or the business owners got upset, so they done a clean sweep.
I dig it. And we've been talking with, if you wish to say.
Well, they're blaming it on the homeless Pride week. Maybe, I don't know.
And what's your name?
That's guest Steve.
Thank you, Steve. Mm-hmm. I'll pass this on.
Yep.
Julie Shaw, yes. Santa Cruz Full-Timers. Okay, here's the first question that I was wondering is, a lot of the farmers markets take the SNAP EBT food stamp card. I guess it has CalFresh. They have all these different names for one little plastic card. But the West Side Farmers Market, Lower West Side, they don't accept it.
Oh, they're a higher brand of Farmers Market. They don't want the riffraff.
Wow. And then also,
I'm guessing,
the Housing Authority in the Lower West Side has a vacant piece of residential property that's never been developed since the house was raised a few years ago. And I was wondering, do they have a lot of vacant properties that are undeveloped?
I wouldn't know, but I will get back to you in a bit. We've been talking with
Julie Shaw.
Thanks, Julie. Any reports, Sonny?
Let's keep it anonymous, but fellow officer waking up saying, on my schedule or on my duty, you guys aren't allowed to be sleeping here around the area, so we kind of like it if you guys not choose this area to sleep, because we've been getting reports saying that there's a lot of ruckus located here and at the beach, which is usual. Any officer could read a report.
How many people were affected?
Just myself.
We'll talk more at some point. Thank you, sir.
Yeah.
Fair enough. I'll be around.
Bob,
did you get a haircut or what?
Yes, sir.
Looks good.
You are.
Yeah, boy.
You're telling me.
Hope it looks okay.
Any hassles or any access to bathroom problems?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
Tell me about the latest, if anything. Nothing at this point.
I'll have to
think about it.
Search on it.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Thank you, though.
I can't always access them.
Oh, no problem.
Okay.
Any reports from the street?
I just heard Tiger died.
And remind you, do you know Tiger?
I knew her.
Tell me a little bit about her.
I just was wondering if you heard it.
I had not heard. You're the first person who's mentioned it.
That's the news from the street.
Do we know what she died of?
I
don't even know who she is, but you do, so that's good. Thank you. Hey,
hey Robert.
Any reports?
Long time no see, yeah. About how she went, I don't know. But I hope the best for her. She's one of the people we knew in the old days. She makes me being as wild as they come.
How long you been back?
About 7 months now.
Oh, and this Red Church, usual stop of yours?
Yeah, it is always. Always come in to see everybody.
I've probably spoken to you before recently.
Yeah, way back in the day and then just recently. Yeah.
Anything you want to report?
Nothing then. We're just living and making it, hoping for the best. All we can do.
And we've been talking with
John.
Thanks.
Sonny. AK.
Thank you, man. Hey.
How are you?
Why aren't you playing the piano?
That's a very good question. I don't want to interrupt this other young man that's involved with it. It's the guitar, and I don't know how to melt into what he's doing exactly. So.
Well, you may play better than he does.
Oh, God has different kind of ears than we do also, but I don't know what to say about that. But maybe after he's finished, I could be glad to play the piano.
All right, we'll be expecting that. Otherwise, we may have to beat you.
Oh, I don't know if I could get much music out of that.
No, probably not. We've been talking with
Harriet.
Thanks, Harriet.
All right, thank you.
Much smaller number today than in the past. I guess people have been sort of not been showing up, perhaps, or they haven't for a month, so here they are. Hey, Phil.
Okay. Oh, my goodness.
Your goodness,
you're
it is.
Vertical.
Vaguely, yes.
Wait, maybe this is a dream.
No, this is just the usual nightmare, my son.
Virtual Robert.
Any reports from the street? Have you been trying to use the Loud Nelson bathrooms lately?
Wow. No, I'm not allowed to go in there.
I would hope not.
It's so disgusting. What's really disgusting is, you know, when was it? The other day, the Democratic Socialist Club met. And at the Loudoun Center. Not.
This is Phil Posner, who's a regular bagel server at the Red Church, and also is one of the activists working on an action to demand the city restore access to the Loudoun Nelson bathrooms with the group of people, which some call the Conscience in Action group.
Not only was it closed, we had to go ask for it to be open. And that group paid to use the facility.
Well, they might be, attending to the riffraff. You understand. They're trying to be... Anyway, here's a petition. Suggestion. Might take a few of the story about the Loudoun Nelson. And I was actually circulating a petition for people to sign up to document how many of them were turned away from bathrooms, and particularly from the Loudoun Nelson bathroom. Didn't get much response, although I did speak about it, and you'll hear me talking about it to the group later, and also circulating a story, which was the Sentinel story, which finally describes months later, where they should force all those Sentinel employees to go piss in the bushes if they want to go to the bathroom. I guess they didn't consider it newsworthy until some middle-class person complained about it. Let's hear some more.
Announcement, everybody. Announcement. You may have heard, probably everybody has, that the Loudoun Nelson bathrooms are now being closed to even to non-homeless people who aren't, you know, using their building other than children. I've got a story here in case you want to read it. It's from the Sentinel, so it's always of questionable validity, but you can look it over. And also, more important, I'm trying to get people to sign up around the issue of, have you been forced to take a dump or a piss in the bushes because you did not have access to a bathroom? Either because you were turned away, or because there were no bathrooms available, or possibly because of some other reason. So I would like to present evidence that a lot of people are getting, shall we say, the shit, so to speak, because they can't use public facilities that they need to use. So if you're interested... I think that's true. But, and they should have some bathrooms open.
Whoever's messing it all up for everybody else.
Yeah.
What we have here is the usual establishment story that the only problems that homeless people have are because there's some bad apples who are ruining for everybody else. In fact, of course, I think that's nonsense. That's the excuse used for cleaning out all homeless people from an area, for criminalizing everybody. It mainly has to do with things like property values, the sensibilities of middle-class people who have no right to be infringing on the survival rights of other people, who have really no rights to be insisting on the privileges they have at the expense of the health and safety of poorer people. But you live in a society where 1% buys the road, and until we change it, it will continue that way.
That could, that's a part of it.
How does that really help from getting their attention by smothering us poop all around the bathroom?
Right. The reality is that the bathroom should be open even if some people are messy because we need them.
Right.
Everyone needs them. So
you shut them down at 10 over there in Pacific, and then there's a little portal that they're supposed to be reopening. They're not opening that one until like 10:45, 11 o'clock because they figure...
At night.
At night. So you got an hour. You got an hour between 10 o'clock and 11 that there's no restrooms unless you go to Pizza My Heart, and they're now they're not. That's nice to use.
What he's talking about are the locked porta-potties, I think, on Cedar Street. I didn't quite catch which ones he was speaking of, but those are porta-potties that are locked during the day. You can't use them during the day, but they're supposed to be the compassionate use porta-potties at night, although often, as I'm told, they're either A, very stinky, B, they're just messed up. Often, because they are, you know, insufficiently cleaned. I don't know all the details around them, but they aren't the normal public bathrooms that you need to have open and need to have cleaned regularly. So, I continue with my announcement here.
You had something you wanted to say?
It's only coming about now?
Yeah. Oh. Oh yeah, it's been happening, but it reached the newspaper. You know.
It's new now.
No, I agree with you. It's not.
Well, they didn't know at all.
But it's you know, it's annoyed a few people because it gotten on the front page of the Sentinel. So try to make use of that.
Woo
woo.
Can I use the Sentinel to wipe my ass?
Yes, but it's going to cost you $1.50 to do it. So, can you raise your hand if you've been unable to use a bathroom in the last week somewhere? I want to count. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Okay, if you have been able to use a bathroom, raise your hand. And we got about 6. So, I was 7. So, it looks like folks are, the non-bathroom users are outnumbered by the users are outnumbered by the non-bathroom users.
Actually, it was the other way around, but that was a small, limited percentage of the room, because there were probably a majority of people who didn't answer. And the real question, of course, is not who could use and who couldn't use a bathroom, but more important, how many people felt they had to take a dump outside. or take a piss outside. That is how it should have been phrased. Maybe in my follow-up, I will do it that way.
There's a city council meeting in a week and a half. Not that that makes any difference. It probably doesn't. But if you're interested in giving me more information, come over here when you're finished eating and I'll take it and we'll pass it on to them. And you could have a bathroom party. Thank you. That again. You say that there's this interesting simultaneous closing of the bathroom?
Yes.
Tell me more about that. Yeah.
Well, this morning, this was about the fifth time or maybe the fourth time in the last 2 weeks that the bathrooms were shut down. And as well, when you would go to the bus station to go to the restroom, that would be closed for whatever reason as well. One time they said they had repairs, which had taken them several days, and they did provide porta-pots. But the other times, there was no explanation, just shut.
Now, you've been outside for a while.
About a month then.
How many times would you say you've had to use, just take a dump outside or piss outside?
I don't know the exact count. Probably once each night.
And is that because there's no bathroom around, you're in a very, you know, an isolated area, or because the bathrooms are just not accessible to you, or some combination?
There's nothing that's close enough. That's close enough that's open. And then it creates the march. And the older you get, the obviously longer it is to go without using the restroom.
Right, right. Sure.
So you run into where you have no choice. Either you're going to go in your pants or you're going to go find a place.
And has that happened to you or to other people with any frequency, that you've essentially had to dump yourself or piss yourself because you couldn't get to a bathroom?
Oh, yeah. Just the parking garage over by 99 Bottles smelled like urine for 3 weeks. 2 weeks, 3 weeks. It stunk. It was like unapproachable.
Because people, you think, couldn't hold it if the place was closed?
That's obvious. That's obvious, hand in hand. You know, and it's recent closed, and it hasn't happened for 4 or 5 days prior to last evening. And the parking garage is smelling fine now. So, it obviously, it was that when they were shut down for that length of time in those weeks.
Now, did you say you only been outside for about a month? You weren't around when the San Lorenzo campground was going?
Yes, that is filled. Yeah, I'm on the River Street shelter. I've been there, I've been there for almost a month, still on it, and the tent thing, there's no use of even signing up, I was told. It's down at Coral Street. I was told don't even worry about that. Call them because they're going to maybe have something else July 1st.
Do we have any indication what that's likely to be?
No. No indication. No idea. He didn't have. And that was Brian down at the
Coral Street Lack of Services Center.
Right.
And we've been talking with, if you wish to say,
Steve.
Thanks, Steve. You're saying even here in the parish hall of the Red Church, that bathroom is locked here as well?
The one across the street, the porta-pot.
Not the one in the church.
No, the porta-pot all night. It's almost like they just forget.
But the church bathrooms are not open at night. They're just open, unless you're part of a program that's using, I presume, the church.
I wouldn't know that. As far as I've never went in here at night.
So the one across the street at Cedar and Lincoln is the porta potty outside is locked all night.
Yes, Yeah, you never know when it's going to be open or not. Yeah.
Generally, crap shoot, so to speak.
Exactly.
Yep. Well, thanks, Steve. We will pass on the word and the stench as well about this whole situation. You wanted to add something, Steve?
The bathrooms have been thrashed, though, on the other side, and they had closed the ones at the parking garage.
Locust Street parking garage?
Not sure of that street over there.
The one across from New Leaf? Or the
yes.
One?
Yes.
That would be the Soquel.
Yeah, it was closed due to vandalism. They had to sign up. It was closed for, I don't know, almost a week, roughly.
Did you see the vandalism, or did you just saw the sign?
No. But I can say this. When it opened, the first day that it opened, someone had stuffed something into the toilet again. And I was like, oh my God, here we go again. They'll probably close it again. But this time they didn't.
So they were able to deal with the so-called vandalism.
Yes.
Cool. Thank you.
Yeah, you gotta have both sides. The truth, the truth. You know, I'm not.
I want the whole truth.
Yeah. Yep. That's it.
Thank you, Steve. You're telling me you usually have access to a bathroom in the morning, but less so in the evening. Or would that be fair to say? Or
fire.
Yeah. And here's Mama Val strumming away. Listening to the music of.
What's that?
What's your name, musician?
Mama V, Promise.
What else would it be? Thank you. And regarding Mama Val's partner or sometime partner and friend and fellow musician, Lee is facing a hearing tomorrow morning on Friday, June 8th at the Santa Cruz County Courthouse at 9 a.m. with Judge Salazar. And Mama Val asks that people show up there. She plans to be there at 8 or even before in case they change it. She's hoping to have some music out front, a cappella. And she encourages you to sing as well. You can bring instruments. The charge that Lee is facing is carrying a concealed weapon, a felony charge for a stupid, manic, as she describes it, delusional mistake of carrying a broken knife blade with the intention of getting it out of harm's way. And she's optimistic, she says. The Veterans Justice Outreach Officer is working to negotiate some kind of solution that ideally involves immediate release or interim referral to a halfway house on condition of Lee's participation in a treatment program, which ideally would be a group therapy program, no medication because it doesn't work for him. That will enable him to have the charge reduced or even expunged retroactively, and he gets to have his hearing held in vets court, which is a bit less hostile. So that's tomorrow at 9 o'clock. At the courthouse at 701 Ocean. That's Mama Val looking for people to show up to support Lee, who's a regular performer on Pacific Avenue and also at the Red Church. So, you're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, freakradio.org, and here's that long-awaited musical break. So, next up, here's a song called Whistleblower on an album by Thrice, To Be Everywhere Is To Be Nowhere. I'm going to speak the lyrics first so you can actually decipher them. They're kind of hard to hear. You told me not to worry, it's all for the greater good. Who made you judge and jury? Who gave you the axe and the hood? You want it sealed. I'll tell you the real story. I'm the bird that sings. I'm the whistleblower. Wake up and take warning, congressmen and kings. I'm the whistleblower waiting in the wings. You told me keep it quiet, that I'd ruin everything, but I'd rather start a riot than help you pull these strings. You told me to kneel. I'll tell the real story. I'm the bird that sings. I'm the whistleblower. Wake up and take warning, congressmen and kings. I'm the whistleblower waiting in the wings.
Yeah.
next up, I'm going to play the first half of an interview with Peter Marin from, at least a week ago now, on the issue of, well, an issue that Wes White won, or that was won by the RV dwellers, at least for the moment, in Salinas, although we didn't really investigate how they're being persecuted under the existing laws, not to mention these proposed laws that they beat back briefly last Tuesday. But let's hear Peter Marin in Santa Barbara talking about issues down there and his struggle against similar laws.
Hello.
Hey, Peter. You set to go?
I suppose so, Robert.
Alrighty. Well, let me roll up the carpet here, or roll out the carpet. So it's Saturday, the 2nd of June, and we're in the early afternoon. I'm on the line with activist, writer, and hopefully troublemaker Peter Marin in Santa Barbara. Hello, Peter.
Hello, Robert.
And I reviewed briefly the letter you wrote almost 2 weeks ago now to supporters advising folks of threats to people in RVs in Santa Barbara. You want to fill us in a little background? And I was actually going to read the letter aloud, but I figured it might be better to have you in person.
I'll probably not be as angry as I was when I wrote the letter, but I hate to review this stuff, but it goes so far back. You know, basically for 20 years, the city has been waging a war on poor people who try to survive in our town by living in RVs. That's it. As a rule, over time, on flimsy excuses or questionable laws, on the basis of those, they've towed vehicles without any warning whatsoever, which means that people don't get a chance to set right what was wrong. And therefore, before they can retrieve the vehicles, they have to pay what's usually a $575 towing fee, a $160 release fee, and also whatever tickets they've gotten or may be outstanding on the vehicle. Meaning, we're dealing mainly with people below the poverty line who probably make less than $1,000 a month. Very often on Social Security disability, and yet they have to spend that amount or more to retrieve the vehicles they live in. All of this is known to the city, which has a habit of towing these vehicles on the basis of a 72-hour law, which says you can't be in the same place for 72 hours or more, because then your vehicle is adjudged to be either abandoned or stored. The word stored means, in the dictionary, set aside for future use, and neither of those terms apply to vehicles that people are living in. This does not matter to the city, nor does anything involving due process, which is usual when you confiscate any kind of property.
What is, let me interrupt you, Peter, what is the, has there been much, you know, court challenged on any individual cases where a person had her vehicle taken and thought it was inappropriately done and then had some, attempted to get some just response, some recompense for that?
The city gives you a bogus police hearing where you can appear before an official appointed by the police department, usually a retired police officer, who in theory gives you a hearing as to the legitimacy of the towing, but we've never had anybody who won such a hearing. Beyond that, no, nobody, no one has pushed this past the magistrate, but we are about to file a suit in federal or state court, probably state court, going after the city for its various RV laws and the systems of enforcement concentrating on the illegal confiscation of property. which I think may well put the city in jeopardy for having to repay people whose property was towed illegally. As you may know, there was a recent verdict in Fresno, California, either a verdict or a settlement, I can never remember which, in which the city had to cough up $2 million.
I do. I remember 2006. It was a successful venture where the attorneys donated much of the money to the victims, the homeless folks.
Right, and they were basically compensating people for having illegally confiscated their clothing and their tents.
And they also forwarded or put out an injunction for about 5 years and extended it. I think it lapsed recently, but I could be wrong about that. And I guess you're looking for something similar.
Yes, we are, though it's my belief the city will probably enter into settlement talks before this ever gets to a court, because I think it's very clear that they're violating not only due process laws, but the constitutional rights of RV dwellers and also ADA regulations, since half of the people who live in these vehicles are disabled.
Mm-hmm.
In part because, as you know, disability payments haven't basically moved for the last 20 years. And the only available housing or affordable housing almost anywhere in California that the disabled can find is to live in vehicles.
How many folks generally would you estimate are living in vehicles, and whether it's the Santa Barbara area or the larger Santa Barbara, Carpinteria, et cetera, area?
But I don't know how many. I would say there's probably 100 vehicles in the immediate area, which would mean 150 to 200 people living in the vehicles. However, I think there's a principle involved which is important, at least statewide and perhaps even nationwide, and that is the fact that these vehicles should be treated as both vehicles and homes. And there doesn't seem to be any applicable set of laws anywhere which takes this into account.
Mm.
There was a case recently in Washington State where a particular judge, a single judge, not I think at the state court level, but in a local court, ruled that vehicles in Washington State should be subject to the homestead laws and should be treated as homes under the state's homestead laws, and therefore could not be taken without a complicated legal process.
Yeah, I think I recall that. And is that being challenged, you know, by the Seattle authorities, or is that?
I don't know. As far as I know, they let it slide, right? I mean, it was a local decision. It may not be even binding on the state as a whole. I don't know about that, right? But in fact, California has a homestead law, and I'm not clear as to whether or not a similar argument could be made. What we hope to do in the state court is to make the argument that these are vehicles, but they are also our homes, so they should be subject to some of the same laws that vehicles are, but also subject to certain laws that homes are subject to.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, you can't confiscate them without due process and legal notice.
And is the threat of this lawsuit having much impact on actual police behavior toward folks in RVs?
I think some, but I can't tell how much. What the city did do, as you know, one of the things we're contesting is the citywide ban on RV parking. But what they did do is make the first step a $49 ticket. Now, for people living on disability or even less, $49 ticket is nothing to sneeze at, especially if they come in clusters. In theory, there's no place you can park in Santa Barbara on the streets without getting such a ticket. Moreover, as you may know, the DMV defines oversized vehicles in a certain way so that most small RVs would not trigger any kind of DMV regulation because they would be within the size boundaries. What Santa Barbara has done beyond banning all RVs is to call them oversized vehicles and define it so narrowly that every RV you can find, and indeed even Sprinter vans produced by the Mercedes people, are considered oversized, even though they really don't take up much more room than an ordinary car.
Well, I know that you began your May 21st letter by noting that you'd gotten a call from an RV dweller who's been ticketed several times and is apparently, as of yesterday, owed $522 when he again registers his vehicle. He's a guy, according to your account, who gathers cans and refuse, makes a living that way, and he gets ticketed.
Yes, that's exactly right. Now, I don't think he has been towed yet. We're helping him pay his registration fee and all the tickets, but his income wouldn't allow him to cover the tickets on his own. And we had another guy who had accumulated $1,330 in tickets, largely because he has no income whatsoever, and his vehicle was towed without notice by the city. The point here being, as you will understand, that had he received a notice or a ticket, I could have helped him pay the tickets, or he could have applied, as he did, eventually, for a payment plan. Right? He did get a payment plan to pay the tickets back at $20 a month, which he probably could have scrounged up. However, by then the vehicle had already been towed, and it would have cost upwards of $1,000 to get it back.
And I assume that the towing companies don't have such generous, or if you want to call them generous, limited $20 a month payback programs.
Actually, you can bargain with the tow company. Right? So in this case, I'm told they would probably settle for $350. And the reason they'd settle for it is that they have to keep these vehicles for 30 days and then try to sell them to recoup their expenses in keeping them. They don't like keeping them because they take up too much room in the tow yards, and they don't bring much money at auction. So that very often they're anxious to let them go, and you can bargain with them.
Are they allies in opposing these kinds of measures in the city?
No. No. And that is the terrible thing. I mean, we, as you know, this is a liberal city. We have a liberal council. We have a council, the council that voted the ban on RVs and has overseen the towing, is made up of 5 Democrats and 2 conservatives. 3 of the 5 Democrats are what you'd call progressive Democrats.
And they all voted for it.
At one point, they all voted for it. The next time around, it was 5-2 for it.
Mm-hmm.
And in point of fact, you also have to know, of course, in Santa Barbara, we no longer have a year-round shelter, right? We have a cold weather rain shelter for several days a year, but that's it. So if people don't live in their RVs, they're basically on the street and homeless. They have no alternatives. And the city council, made up of mainly Democrats, has also overseen that development as well. Beyond that, as you know, the wait for subsidized housing vouchers in Santa Barbara is now somewhere between 8 and 10 years.
And I take it even during the winter, when there is presumably some limited shelter facilities, folks in RVs may have trouble using those facilities, even if they want to, because of parking problems at night?
Yes. I mean, the fact is, you're not allowed, quite literally, you're not allowed to park anywhere, anytime, in an RV in Santa Barbara. To add insult to injury, the city has exempted from this ban all business vehicles of a similar size during the day. So, originally arguing that these vehicles are a safety problem, the city has then gone ahead and given permits for daytime parking far more vehicles than there are RVs. And so the safety issue gets washed away, but the city still persists in giving exemptions to business vehicles and no exemptions to RVs.
If the local poor folks got together and declared their vehicles were business vehicles.
Yes, but you have to have a commercial plate and a business license to do that.
Which costs as well and requires preconditions as well.
Yes, exactly.
You also mentioned in your correspondence that a particular parking enforcement officer has been relentlessly ticketing folks. Are people in their RVs documenting this as it happened with, you know, cell phones and other video equipment?
No, you know, look, I'm not sure how to describe this. You've dealt with similar people, obviously, because you deal with the homeless all the time. Some of them are outlaws and don't like going through any procedures, right?
Mm-hmm.
Just basically want to be left alone. Some of them really are physically and or mentally challenged, which is why they're on disability, right? Beyond that, many of them have been reduced to RVs because they're no good at manipulating or maneuvering their way through a bureaucratic system. So that they're, as a rule, not the kinds of people with the patience to document anything.
It wasn't really referring to documentation that would maybe necessarily stand up in court, but rather for the purposes of, you know, public expression. I know we have, for example, RV dwellers in Monterey County who are able to effectively pressure the supervisors there for a time to allow at-night camping along a stretch of road called Lapis Road, although immediately all the surrounding communities created no RV laws during the day, or at least very limited parking. And so they had to move during the day in order to come back and park their vehicles at night along this stretch of road, and that was sort of shut down, I think, in October of last year anyway.
The opposition to these people is fairly strenuous and organized, right? It would be possible. Look, for one thing, to be clear or to be fair, we do still have in town, you may remember it from when you were here, a safe parking program, which actually I and a few other people began back in the early 2000s. And it was a very simple program. You just asked the city or a private lot, like churches, to let people park there during the night. Since then, this has become a bureaucratic nightmare, so that you can be in the program if you satisfy many kinds of requirements, but you get one spot in the daytime and a totally different spot at night, right? So you have to travel from one spot to the other. Meantime, even if you're in the program, you can't park on the streets. And in order to get into the program, you have to sign an extraordinary list of submissive agreement in which basically you give away your rights, so that day or night you may not have a visitor in your vehicle, day or night you may not have anyone sleep over in your vehicle, day or night you may not have alcohol, even an unopened bottle, in your vehicle, day or night you may not have a gun in your vehicle, even though everybody else in the community is allowed to have a gun in their vehicle. So what they've done basically is take away your right to self-protection, your right to association, and along the way a couple of other rights which I've forgotten. Moreover, when you park in one of your assigned spots, as a rule there are no bathroom facilities, and you are not supposed to leave your spot, go out, and come back to it. So in point of fact, your only choice is to piss or shit in a bottle or a box.
And how many people subject themselves to this?
A lot, because it's your only out. So I think there's about at least 30 vehicles in the program. But of course, if they don't have a space for you, there's a waiting list. And even if you're on the waiting list, if you park anywhere in town while waiting, you'll be ticketed. But remember, in this program, there's a large number of disabled people. So the fact is, if you want to drive to the doctor, if you want to drive to the grocery, if you want to go to a movie, if you want to do anything in town, go down to the beach, you can't because you can't put your vehicle anywhere.
And these laws came into force when?
Well, they go all the way back, right? The most recent ban, which is this total ban, came into effect in 2017, first introduced in 2016. But you may remember way back in 2005, the city also tried to ban RVs in the entire city, and we went to state court and managed to defeat that.
Using arguments that it would require a lot of signage?
Yeah, that was the argument back then. And this time, I'm not sure why. The city claims to have, as they did not back then, they claim to have put up signs about oversized vehicle at every single entrance to the city. Though I actually think that claim is not quite true. And also at certain other spots in the city, but not on the streets where this is true, right? Just a certain spot. So if you were a stranger, you probably would miss the signs and park on the streets against the law. But I believe the city might well, in that case, just give you a verbal warning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the reason I mentioned the Lapis Road folks in Monterey County was they have, as a group of people, although they're not the most well-coordinated or effective documentarians, themselves use their video to document encounters with sheriffs and so forth that they then put up online and were able to get some favorable publicity. I take it that hasn't really been happening much in Santa Barbara?
I think it runs the other way. I think all the publicity... I believe the battle has been won by certain civic organizations arguing that these RVs are a detriment to commerce and the town as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
Or they refer to the safe parking program as if that was something good and fair. But no, most of our RVers are not politicalized. I mean, there's a lot. Look, I don't know. It may have something to do with the town. You understand that in L.A. and many other enclaves, you can put up tents because there's no place else to go, correct?
Under the Jones settlement, yeah.
Yes. Well, we have nobody in Santa Barbara who's tried to pitch their tents on the green patch in front of City Hall or in a park, right, as a protest and then see what the city can do because there's no place else to go.
How about under the freeways?
No, what they've done is over by West Beach on the dunes, they've put up their tents, and the police sort of left them alone for a while and then went in and destroyed or confiscated them.
And you don't have much jungle territory left where people were doing that in the 80s?
No, only by the garbage dump, right? But the point is, what we don't have here... is anything close to a pro bono attorney. None are left, right? So there's not only is that true, but in point of fact, the few groups that are dealing with police abuse or immigration laws and rules do not concern themselves with the homeless. It's very interesting to me. I think there's other towns like this. Where you are, it's probably not entirely like this. But we do not have a sympathy for the homeless among progressive Democrats, say, or even people to the left of them.
I think that's generally true here as well, although some groups like Food Not Bombs, which maintains a visible public presence every Saturday and Sunday here, has, at least in the past few years, you know, taken some attempts to move against ordinances, sitting bans, extreme restrictions on performers, what I call the performance pens, areas that limit First Amendment activity to very small areas along the downtown sidewalks.
No, we don't have a Food for Bob's group here. What's happened is, in this town, which may have happened elsewhere, like two things. One is, the service providers have dissociated themselves in the main from advocates, so that they feel the answer to all these problems is the increase in services, even though we don't have adequate services. So we used to have a day center. We no longer have a day center, right? We used to have a midday meal program. We no longer have a midday meal program. And partly that's because of the second thing, which is that all the service providers, partly because of federal decisions about where money is to go, are concentrating on housing.
Well, I noticed that's a part of the mythology. I'm looking at this article in the local San Jose Mercury News about Saratoga expanding into a safe park program, which is sort of it's a very favorable little story. But it mentions the same kind of, well, they allow pets, but you can't do. You have to put placards in your window so the sheriff knows if you're approved. You have prohibit alcohol, drugs, weapons, cooking, and camping equipment, quiet hours when music and loud voices have to cease, screaming, prohibits cursing, hitting, intimidation, and abusive language. I mean, all sounds kind of nice, but if you had people patrolling your home looking for this...
Well, more than that, first thing is none of those behaviors are necessarily prohibited in a house.
Right, exactly.
Right. Secondly, none of those limits are put on other people in other vehicles.
Right.
Right? And in point of fact, by doing that, the city has quite clearly deprived people of rights that they are guaranteed under the state constitution and the DMV laws, which are indeed part of the state constitution. Right? And so everybody else gets a license to drive a vehicle within certain limits, right? But what the localities do is they tell people, well, you can only drive an RV, even though the DMV permits it, right, if you follow these rules. And the rules are totally unconstitutional.
And plus they infantilize or criminalize homeless people and treat them as...
That's the whole point.
Yeah.
And it treats people in vehicles as if they were not responsible, right? And it doesn't say to them, okay, you can have a vehicle as long as you don't break any of our city laws, right? Which include certain levels of violence, right? Certain kinds of noise, annoyance, right? All cities have laws about this. Nonetheless, they have to make special laws to apply to RVs.
And that's going to be it for Peter Maron's, at least the first part of the interview. Back on Sunday, probably in the early part of the show, we'll play the rest of that interview. You're tuned to Free Radio, 101.3 FM, and going to go musical now. Here's Peggy Seeger introducing one of her controversial songs.
Okay, I'm running through them in order. I'm not very good at writing songs for campaigns. I'm dreadful at street singing. I suppose what I am good at is putting a case, you know, just laying out ideas. And I wrote this one after I visited the home that I'd lived in from age 8 to 18, a lovely old house in Chevy Chase. Of course, Chevy Chase was a lovely old place, and the contract buying the house, I'm sure my father would have had to have signed the contract saying no Jews and no Negroes allowed to buy in this area. But nonetheless, that's where we lived, in a feng shui house right on the corner, beautiful house. The people who bought it after us were great, and they lived in it for 50 years. People who bought it after them, 8 years ago, stripped every single beautiful feature out of the center of it. They gutted it. Only 2x4s inside. They took out all the beautiful old corner cupboards, the little closets, everything, and turned it into every man's yuppie palace. You know? I went to see it, and I wrote this. It only, it's called The Progress Train. And it isn't very hopeful. You know, but progress is going to, you know, repeal HB2. It will, it has to. You know? But I would have written it after seeing Asheville, coming back here after being away for 10 years and seeing what's happening to Asheville, you know. So, this song will never hit the top 20. The human brain can't stand still, even when it gets to the top of the hill. Just can't stop and admire the view. Always got to have something new. The human being's an intelligent fool. Build you a hospital, build you a school. You wake up the very next day. The progress train took it all away. The progress train can demolish your town. Selling us heaven when we're hellbound. When we're hellbound. Fed by apathy, driven by greed. Always going at top speed, going so fast. You won't notice it till it's past. Doesn't give a damn about yesterday. And when you forget what it took away, you'll know the progress train rolled right over you. Juggernaut hurtling down the road. You're not in control, you're part of the load. Running the lights won't slow down. Get in its way and it'll run you down. The progress train's on a one-way track. Take you there, won't bring you back. And when you start singing, I'm alright, Jack. I'm alright, Jack. I'm alright, Jack. You know the progress train ran right into you. The girl in the red shoes had to dance. The progress train has to advance. Tables to turn, money to earn, bridges to burn. We never learn, got no destination, it'll go anywhere. Doesn't even know when it's got there. Got no beginning, got no end. Doesn't even care what's around the bend. Got to grow, got to change. Build up, tear down, rearrange. Got to move on, dirty or clean. It's a fusion bomb. It's a washing machine. It's a love song. It sings, seducing us with things that ease our hearts and please our minds. The passengers sleep and the driver's blind. Fire in his pants. He don't dance. No romance. He wants you now. And he'll have you now. He'll have you. They'll have us. They'll have us. They've got us right now. That's the progress train. And it's right over you. The human race has a fatal knack of going full speed down a cul-de-sac. After running so fast or working hard, we got a hell of a mess in the backyard. The progress train sings sweet and low. And every time you hear it, you know something may be wrong. Still, you tap your feet. The words don't matter, 'cause the tune's so sweet. That's the progress train. As I said, it will never make the top 20. Overpopulation. Yeah. I made this song up 25 years ago and I've never sung it in public. And I know why. So I added an open verse, opening verse, and an ending verse. Because you might be singing to a pregnant woman out there, somebody who's just had a baby and is not feeling good, or has just died, or something like that. So an opening verse and a closing verse might help negate it. Baby, welcome if you're already here. Pretty little baby, welcome if you're coming soon. pretty babies, if you're far, far away, think about waiting a while, 'cause here there's not much room. To Susan and Jimmy, your daughter.
And we're having a bit of technical problems here, so let's skip back to a few interviews. Here's an interview I had, day before yesterday on Election Day, as I stalked the polls and did my duty voting. Actually, I don't think it's my duty, and I will say again, for those who tell you, you know, if you don't vote, you shouldn't complain, I would say if you do vote, then that's when people have the right to complain about you, because you are endorsing the system and the people that are being plebiscited in under your name. But nonetheless, I went to the polls and voted on a few things, and here's someone I met en route to the polls.
We better put this on tape. So we're talking with
Susan Wirth. I'm mad as hell about the libraries, the DLAC committee. All those librarians and other people related to the library want to take that downtown library right out from in front of City Hall, you know, right across from our City Hall and our Civic Center there, the Civic Center Theater. They want to take it out and put it in the middle of the parking lot where our farmers market is, and destroy one of the last wonderful things we've got about Santa Cruz.
Isn't that what the new Santa Cruz is all about?
Oh, yeah, it is. It is. It's a destruction, crazy, money-hungry, smog-loving group. And we're going to have to give gas masks to the kids in the library. It's insane.
Now, why would that be?
Well, because it's going to be under a parking structure in the middle of that parking lot. They just want to make more money off of parking and more cars downtown. It's so wrong. And we need to fight it. And I think the last chance to fight it is this June 19th. It's a Tuesday, so it must be a city council meeting, right?
Could be.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a Tuesday, so it must be city council. That's all I know. And we got to get out and fight to keep the library where it is, and they can put another floor on, maybe even two floors on that library, and make it nice and retrofit
the current library.
The current library. Leave it where it is. Save the library.
And we've been talking with
Susan Wirth.
Thanks, Susan. So I'm talking with
Sherry Cherie.
And Sherry, what's on your mind?
Well, I spent over 2 years trying to get back into the Interfaith Satellite Church program. I was in it for 9 months, and my big crime was I had the Beatles on too loud like 2 hours after we'd been awake. So
that's pretty serious shit.
I was evicted for that. And for that serious crime, I'm not allowed in there again, even though I called them many, many times, but two of my children called them. But and I have a problem with if the Salvation Army had only been here from Watsonville for 5 days. With her bratty little 4-year-old son that fought with her nonstop over his cell phone. He was on his third cell phone, and he broke that one too. But she didn't know how to parent him at all, so he was the ultimate brat. And they were picked to live in the church program over me.
This is the Association of Faith Communities program.
So they saw me. I saw Al, and I said hello to him, and he acted like he'd seen a monster or whatever, and got everyone, oh, she's going to create trouble. Oh, there she is. And I said to him, have a good night. Like, I don't have any intentions other than feeding the birds, but I have a problem with the faith interfaith church or whoever they are. They
Association of Faith Communities.
16 people in, and one of them's from Watsonville, less than a week, when there's people in Santa Cruz that have been on the streets for years, and we'd like to stay in a church.
And they have a maximum of 20, I believe, but and you were there, what, until last year or something?
I was there. I haven't been there for 2 years, over 2 years, almost 3 years.